Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types. From a left-wing perspective, it is Saturday, August 26th, 2017. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
Whole bunch to get to. A lot happening last night. A lot, I think we said last week, like, oh, we're going to have a whole new roster of crap to talk about. And we sure do. First of all, obviously, Hurricane Harvey hit the Texas coast. Reports are just starting to come in, but it's really what's going to happen over the next few days, which is going to tell the story of just how bad this is. It's going to be pretty bad, especially with all the flooding that's going to take place. This is one of those hurricanes that's just going to stall out and sit and dump rain basically over the same spot. And breaking news, in light of this massive hurricane.
Literally just now.
Trump disbands climate change advisory panel. Well, Trump has had himself quite a weekend. So I don't know if we just want to recap everything and then talk about it.
Yeah.
So he started, well, I don't know the exact timeline on everything, but he pardoned Joe Arpaio. Mm-hmm. He actually drew up the memo for the transgender military ban.
Drew up, signed, and it is in effect.
He fired Sebastian Gorka.
Yes.
There's a couple other things I'm forgetting.
Something about the Obama jobs plan that I don't know much about, but
right.
Something about that.
And now he just disbanded a climate change advisory panel.
In the middle of a fucking hurricane after there was an earthquake in Dallas this week.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
He's been busy.
Yeah. Yes, he has.
Homeboy's been busy. What do you want to start with, Rach? There's just so much to talk about. Where on earth do we start?
Well, I guess if we're talking about the garbage person that's in the White House, we should talk about that. So I guess I want to start with Joe Arpaio because mm-hmm. It's the thing I'm the most mad about. Joe Arpaio was ordered by a judge to stop racially profiling Latino people in Arizona. He was doing so because he thought all people that were brown were illegal immigrants, essentially, and the ACLU sued, and they found that he was absolutely racial profiling, which is against the law. A judge ordered him to stop doing that. He did not stop doing that. He was found in contempt of court and was convicted, and Trump pardoned him because...
Yeah, he kind of hinted that at his Arizona rally without coming out and saying
he
it.
He said,
he'll be okay. Don't worry about him.
I'm not going to say it now, but he'll be okay.
But the racial profiling stuff is actually just the tip of the iceberg.
Yes.
He had basically torture conditions in his jail.
Correct.
Lots of civil rights violations.
The state of Arizona has paid out $140 million in damages to people who have sued from the conditions that were present in his basically
people who died
camps.
Yeah.
Additionally, as of this report that I read earlier today, as of March of 2015, 140 people in his prison or whatever you want to call it had hung themselves or died under circumstances that were not clear. 140 people. In a relatively small state. I mean, you know, when they looked at the numbers, that was an astounding number of people to have died compared to other prisons and incarceration facilities across the country. So
it's literally one of the worst human beings on earth.
On earth. Yep. And, you know, I think if we're going to talk about why he pardoned Joe Arpaio, we have to kind of backtrack and talk about what happened this week with the speeches and the rally and that shit, because that's where this all comes from. Everything that happened on Friday, and by the way, all of the things that Travis just listed happened on Friday. That's what he does. He likes to just dump.
Yeah, he dumps stuff on Friday.
On Friday.
Yeah.
because people are having a weekend and they're maybe not paying attention, or I don't know. But so backing up a little bit, we talked about Charlottesville last week and the absolute horror show that that was and the president's abysmal reaction to it. Fast forward a couple of days later, Monday, he was kind of forced by his staff and by public pressure to come out and say Nazis are bad. yeah. Which was, you know, seems like a pretty easy thing to do.
Seems like a layup for a president, right?
Yeah. So he did that. He read a speech and said, I condone in the harshest, condemn in the harshest terms, blah, blah, blah. Nazis and KKK and neo-Nazis and white supremacists. And he looked like he looked like when you have a kid and you make the kid go say they're sorry to somebody, but they're really not sorry.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like that. Like, right. It was very low energy, very just like, okay, fine. I guess I'll say I'm sorry. I said I'm sorry. I'm sorry I said that. That was his speech on Monday, right? Like, yeah. He said all the right words in an order that made sense. But there was absolutely no Trump behind it, right? Mm-hmm. There was no, like, who gives... He could give a fuck about saying this stuff.
Sure.
So then Tuesday, I guess it was, he... Was it Tuesday with the Afghanistan speech?
No.
No, I'm sorry.
It was an infrastructure thing.
So hold on. So we had Saturday with Charlottesville... Saturday, he came out and said his thing.
Initial statements that were not
good
enough.
Monday, he said the bullshit that he didn't believe.
And then Tuesday, he had a press conference that had to do with the announcement of an infrastructure plan. Then he took questions after that, and that's where he said, that's where he really went off the rails.
Yeah.
And
right. Right. Yeah. You're right. Because then Wednesday was the Afghanistan speech.
Right.
And then when was the rally?
I think it was Thursday.
No, the rally was Tuesday. I know for a fact because a friend of mine at work was supposed to go to Phoenix and our Phoenix office shut down because their office is like a couple blocks away from where the convention center is. And they didn't think it was basically safe for people to.
Are we thinking of the week before?
Maybe.
Anyway,
oh, fuck. I don't
the
know.
Point is.
No, this was this week.
Yeah.
This is the week of the eclipse. This is this week. Right. So, okay. So anyway, so he, sorry, I don't have the dates exactly right because God, so much has happened, but.
No, his Charlottesville comments were the week before. You're thinking of the week before.
Okay. Hold on. Anyway, I don't think that's true.
This is great radio, huh?
I know. We're doing so good. We're doing so many good things. All right, well, let's talk about something else while I get my facts straight, because now I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, there's a lot of speculation as to the pundits sort of scratching their head and thinking, well, why would he do this? What's the political advantage? Is this just to solidify the base more? And I think it's simpler than that. I think Donald Trump really admires and likes Joe Arpaio.
I do, too.
I think when going back, whether it's his... I mean, we're facing an uncomfortable truth that... Even a lot of Trump's worst critics haven't wanted to face. But when you go back and you look at the a history of him getting in trouble with the Justice Department for his real estate policies towards African Americans in the 70s, and you look at what he said about the Central Park Five, and he wanted them summarily executed.
Right.
Even after they were all exonerated, he never... came back and apologized or set the record straight to his old birther movement with President Obama. I mean, this has been a pattern. I'm sorry, but the guy is a racist.
He 100% is a racist.
So
100%. Yes.
Yeah.
So, and I guess you're right. So Charlottesville, it's so fucking hard to keep track of all of the racism.
Yeah. That was last week.
So anyway, my opinion on why he pardoned Joe Arpaio and why he decided to sign the memo to ban transgender troops in the military. And
yeah, we haven't gotten to the transgender ban yet.
Yeah. Is that he, you know, he had the big rally, right? And all the people were bored, as it turned out. that was this week.
As they usually are. He's very long-winded.
That was this week on Tuesday,
yeah,
the rally.
Yeah.
So he went to Arizona, and he'd been criticized widely last week, all week, about how he was a racist and how, you know, yeah. And so he came out and he said in Arizona on Tuesday, he misquoted himself a couple of times, which I thought was pretty interesting. He started to read what I think happened was he had these like pieces of paper in his hand, right? And he's reading from things and he's reading what they wanted him to say.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't say that. He said, you know, I condemn racial violence and all this stuff. But then he forgot that he said on many sides, right? So he's...
No, he didn't forget.
Well, right. But he's like, he's saying...
He was hoping we'd forget.
The fake news didn't report what I actually said. Let me read to you what I said. And then he read it and it's like, no, that's what they asked you to say.
Right.
It's not what you actually said.
Right. 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 Right.
And he just goes on this long 72 minutes of speaking.
Mm-hmm. All about him.
All about him.
How he's been treated unfairly.
Yes.
And
fake
it's so
news.
Unfair. Nothing about the victims. Nothing about how terrible it is. Nothing about Heather Heyer.
No.
All about him. I mean, it was even for Trump, it was unhinged and off the rails.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And was wide reporting that people were really like a lot of like hundreds of people left in the middle of it. Cause they were just like, this is fucking boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
People were sitting on the floor looking at their phones. Like there's a lot of pictures of just like, ugh, more of this. Okay. Anyway, so he did that. And then I think what happened was, you know, he didn't get the same level of, I don't know, like narcissistic energy from it. Like he didn't get the level of like everyone loves me and adoration and stuff that he wanted. And so he was like, you know what I really need to do is play to my base.
Yeah.
Play to the people who love me. I had to say this shit last week. I didn't mean it. I tried to take it back at this rally. People seemed bored and all right, well, I'll just show them by policy.
You think so?
I do. I think what he cares most about in the world is that people love him. And when he feels like they don't, he wants to do something that makes him feel like they love him again. And this is what Friday was.
Yeah, he is racist. I'm not even sure if he's as racist as the people he's...
No, I don't think so.
Sucking up to. I just think he knows they adore him the most.
Right.
So he's trying to make them as happy as possible.
Right. Like, I need you to love me. And even if I don't think this is true or care, this is something that will make you happy and make you love me.
And he's planning more rallies.
Yes. And what is with the rallies? He has only been president for 7 months and it's like he's campaigning. Because
well,
that's what he's good at, right?
Well,
that's what he loves.
That's what he enjoys. That's the only part of this thing that he actually enjoyed.
Yeah.
Was the campaign rallies and the adoration and...
Clapping, yeah, and cheering, yeah, and signs, and
governing sucks.
Yeah,
working sucks.
Hard.
He never does it. He's always playing golf down in Florida, because or in Bedminster, because who wants to sit in the Oval Office and, you know,
deal with
work
shit.
On shit?
It's fucking hard.
Yeah,
it sucks.
Boring. It's complicated. It's boring. Things don't go your way. Congress won't do what you want them to do.
The media doesn't say nice things about me all the time. It's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's where I think this comes from. I think this rash of shit that happened on Friday comes from his need to feel loved.
Just appealing to the most base, most intense portion of his base that want the reddest red super right wing meat that they can consume.
They want the whitest world they can get.
Right. The straightest, whitest world that they can get. So that's the transgender ban. That's pardoning Joe Arpaio. There's rumors he's going to try to eliminate DACA, which is sort of the opposite of where they were going. They thought they were going to try to strike a deal where they keep DACA, but then build the wall. And now he's going to try to do it all somehow. Well, he's never going to get the fucking wall built. But
well, and yeah, that was the weird part of the Arizona speech rally, whatever the fuck you want to call it, is... Congress has sort of an agenda that they're trying to get through, which is
to
like
avoid
tax
a government shutdown. We haven't gotten to that yet. They have very, very little time to get crucial bills passed to keep the government functioning and to keep the United States from defaulting
again.
Right. And there are some elements within the Freedom Caucus and the crazy right that don't want the debt ceiling raised because they don't understand what it is and actually how it works and what it means. And we'll get into that probably another episode.
Mm-hmm.
But they want the United States to default on its debt, or at least they don't understand what that means and what that would mean to the full faith and credit and the United States economy.
Right.
And Trump may provoke that. He's hinting that he may do that.
Yeah,
I mean, we haven't gotten to that yet.
He threatened at the Arizona rally
to shut down the government if he doesn't get the wall.
Government shut down if he doesn't get the fucking wall. Literally, that's like, again, this is why I think he's pandering to this base of racism.
Well, let me explain how this works, right?
Well, hold on. Is that not only is he saying all these things, but he's also threatening government shutdown if he doesn't get the wall. Like, the wall is not a priority for the U.S. economy or for anything.
No, it's a priority to him.
It's a priority for him and for his most racist base.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
And so that's the thing that he's like, fuck everything else. I want people to love me. We're going to build the wall. I'll shut the government down if we don't do it.
Well, he usually backs off from this kind of stuff. Yeah. But I now that he's cornered, who knows?
Yep.
You know, now that he's backed into a corner and he's just lashing out everywhere, who knows? But anyway, let me try to explain without getting too into the weeds here. Okay. The debt ceiling and passing these resolutions is basically these go to the president's desk and they sign them, and Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan have said in no uncertain terms, like, they're not doing another repeat of staring down, because the United States credit rating actually went down because we came that close to defaulting.
Correct.
Under Obama, because they were playing chicken with Obama.
Uh-huh.
Now, but they eventually got a bill, sent it to his desk, and he signed it. Now what they could do is pass a clean debt ceiling bill, which is what they said they're going to do. It's like, nope, that's what we're going to do. We're not fucking around with it this time.
Yep. It was shut devastating up. To the economy.
Just shut up, you crazy freedom caucus people. Uh-huh. This is what we're doing.
Yep.
So ostensibly, if Trump was to go through on his promise and say, no, I'm going to shut down the government if I don't get my funding for the wall, and ostensibly meaning you need to tie it to this continuing resolution, then he could not sign it, or he could veto it.
Yep. Yep.
And he would shut down the government.
My question is, does he know that? Maybe no one told him that.
I never overestimate what he knows and what he understands.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are people trying to explain this to him, but he's a terrible listener and he loses focus and he's stubborn and he doesn't.
What if nobody told him he could veto it? What if passed it?
He knows that. I mean, all he does is watch cable news. So he'll learn that on CNN.
He knows what Fox tells him. So.
Yeah. No, he doesn't just watch Fox. That's the funny thing about him, right? I never watch CNN. Then CNN will say something not nice about him and he'll scream about it on Twitter for 2 hours.
Yes. Post a picture
even though he
of
never
a train
watches
hitting
it.
A person with the CNN as their face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he watches all of it. I'm sure he's got it all on the 3 or 4 TVs.
Yeah.
Just wait, what are they saying about me? What are they saying? And then you got Eric Trump feeding him the Breitbart stuff, and oh man, it's just it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to Arpaio. There's a couple things we have to understand, right? The pardon covers the federal crimes he's been convicted of.
Yes.
There are still state, there's still possible state stuff pending. And then there's a whole bunch of civil stuff that's still pending. And if you accept a pardon, then it's an admission of guilt. So Arpaio is not off the hook completely, but certainly at least some, and he's 85 years old too. He's,
and
on the way out
civil
soon,
stuff
hopefully.
Will not be against him personally, but will be against
the state of
Arizona, which it always has been, which is what I was saying earlier. They paid out $160 million in damages to people who were incarcerated by him. That's not coming out of Joe Arpaio's pocket. That's coming out of the taxpayers of the state of Arizona's pocket.
So the horrible racist white people in Maricopa County, a lot of them are okay with that. The rest of the state is like, fuck this guy, enough of this guy. And they ran a poll previous, should Trump pardon Arpaio? And it was only 21% said yes.
Yeah.
So this is not like to suck up to people in the state, although, Trump ignores polls and just believes what he wants. So
yes.
He'll call that fake.
It doesn't matter. Like,
No, there's racist people in Massachusetts who love Joe Arpaio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Senator John McCain from Arizona came out with a statement earlier about his pardoning of Joe Arpaio, and it was pretty harsh.
But you know what? So what? Okay, is that the extent of what you're going to do? You're going to tweet?
Agreed. But let me just read the statement really quick, and then we're going to talk about John McCain for a minute. Quote, "No one is above the law. And the individuals entrusted with the privilege of being sworn law officers should always seek to be beyond reproach in their commitment to fairly enforcing the laws they swore to uphold. Mr. Arpaio was found guilty of criminal contempt for continuing to illegally profile Latinos living in Arizona based on their perceived immigration status in violation of a judge's order. The president has the authority to make this pardon, but doing so at this time undermines his claim for the respect of rule of law, as Mr. Arpaio has shown no remorse for his actions." Now, John McCain's never going to run for anything ever again.
You wouldn't think so, no.
And as in his, you know, vote on the healthcare reform and all of that, I think he hates Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Passionately.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, he's going to just say fuck you to you every time. But I agree with you. You know, making a statement like that, okay, great.
There's in his power to do more.
Way more. He can do more than I can do.
You could start articles of censure. You could start articles of impeachment. You could do laws in terms of pardons.
Yeah. McCain has a lot of power in the Senate. And
in clout, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm tired of this.
And all these Republicans saying, geez, this is bad, and then not doing
hand-wringing,
anything.
Hand-wringing, oh gosh, what?
I'm so concerned.
Stop? I'm so concerned, and maybe just don't do that, and this is very bad. Yeah. And then they don't fucking do anything.
Nothing.
That's their job.
Nope.
To do something.
Not even censor.
No.
I think Clinton was censored. Bush was censored, right?
Somebody just opened up a censure for Trump over this. It was a Democrat, so, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Remember, Republicans still control Congress.
They control everything, everybody. They control everything.
All three branches and the Supreme Court.
Which means that it's their literal job to do something to help us. And if they don't do it, I'm going to hang this man around their necks for a generation.
Well, we would hope that happens, right? I mean, they're gonna try to run as far away from him as possible once he's out of power. But, I mean...
But what history will determine is what made him get out of power. You guys knew. You knew, you watched, you said, you wrote op-eds, you did all this shit, and you didn't do the thing that's in your power to do.
Well, let's talk about how spineless the Republicans really are. Even Jeff Flake, who Trump has been basically telegraphing that he's going to try to primary.
Well, he's supporting the primary challenger of Jeff Flake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So even that, Jeff Flake's mealy-mouthed response to Arpaio is, I wish he wouldn't have done that.
Well, he's had a pretty...
I would have rather he didn't do that.
Jeff Flake, though, has been fiercely critical of the White House in that statement that he made a couple weeks
ago. Yeah, he was, but then they came back on him and wrapped him hard, and now all of a sudden he's very, at least with this Arpaio thing, I would have rather he didn't. Please.
Wow. Wow.
They're still cowed by him, and they're still cowed by the base.
I don't get it.
And the fact of the matter is, even though Trump's overall approval's in the toilet, it's hovering around 35% to 38%, whichever poll you want to look at, among Republicans, it's still 75%, 80%, 85%.
No.
Yeah, oh, yes.
That's insane.
Well, the Democrats are all against him, and he's horribly upside down with Indies, which still make up a decent part of the electorate that people don't realize, people who call themselves independent. He's way underwater with both of them, but he's still got 75, 80, 85% of people who call themselves Republicans.
That's fucked up.
That's not surprising at all. He is the face of the party. He is the party.
Yeah,
this
obviously.
This is
obviously.
Republicanism. This is the GOP. And they helped build this.
Oh, no, I know.
Even the Never Trumpers. There was a really good article. It had to do mostly with stuff about Israel and always, you know, just saying Obama was not, you know, good enough for Israel. But, you know, a lot of the seeds of this were sown by the very same people, the Rick Wilsons and the Jennifer Rubins and, you know, all these right-wing talking heads that they're on MSNBC 24 hours a day screaming about Trump. They helped build this.
Yeah, they did.
Absolutely, they did.
They did. And I guess... I want to pivot from that to, in my notes it says, stupid racist asshole article. And I want to talk about the Mark Lilla interview.
Oh, boy.
Because if we're going to talk about how the Republican Party helped to do this, we need to talk about what the Democratic Party needs to do going forward. And there is a pretty good divide. And I have 2 points on this, 2 things that relate to this that we're going to talk about. One is the study about Bernie Sanders and his voters, and we can yell about that after the break. But this one I want to get to first, because if we're going to talk about what built this and what allowed and enabled this Trump situation to happen, then we need to talk about in our party what did this. And
where are some of them want to go?
Yes. And this fucking stupid racist asshole, to my notes point, named Mark Lilla, wrote a book called The Once and Future Liberal: After Identity Politics.
Mm-hmm.
and he was interviewed, and the interview is on a podcast, but there was an article that was in Slate that sort of had the finer points, where the article, so this guy is a white liberal, right? He calls himself a quote liberal scholar.
Yeah.
And he's a white guy. And I'm just going to start this off by saying that white liberalism to me sometimes is worse than conservatism.
Can be.
And the title of the article, which sort of has, like I said, the talking points from the podcast interview, is, quote, "There's been a slightly hysterical tone about race that leads us to overestimate the significance in particular things." So
we're being hysterical when Nazis are running over people in Charlottesville. We're being hysterical. Why don't we just calm down?
Why is there so much hysteria about race in this country?
Joe Arpaio is being pardoned. Why don't we just calm down?
It's just this hysteria about race. So I read this article. I read the entire thing. And wow. It is like if a Bernie bro from the internet had a PhD in bullshit and was just like making these, it's like talking to a Bernie bro, except he's really smart and mm-hmm. he's absolutely convinced that he's right.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just give you a little example. I'm not going to read from the article because I don't have it pulled up, but I read it and I discussed it at length with a person, and I will talk about that in a minute. But he's talking about how essentially the Democratic Party is lost because we are so focused on, quote, movement politics and not electoral politics. So movement politics is another word for identity politics.
Right.
And electoral politics is the horse race.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're not focused on the horse race, we don't win.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts talking about how, you know, the entire South used to be Democratic and now the entire South is Republican. And mm-hmm. that's because people in the South who work on farms, which is what he thinks people in the South do, can't relate to Democrats who talk about racism and women and LGBT people. They feel like we are looking down on them because we're not talking to them.
Hey, hot tip. There's farms in Minnesota and Wisconsin,
Colorado,
and Illinois and New York. Mm-hmm. It's not all the South.
And so there's a lot to unpack here. But so, and the guy that's interviewing him is like being adversarial, like they're sort of having a debate essentially. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, the reason that the South used to be Democratic and now is Republican is not because of that.
It's the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah. It's the Southern strategy.
Yeah.
Like
the Dixiecrats, Strom Thurmond taking five or six over to the GOP, and then Lee Atwater capitalizing on that. And yeah.
Right. So his argument is that since the 60s, so he's like from 1934 to basically the 80s, the Democratic Party had a really strong message, which was about unity and economics, and we were unified. Even if we weren't really unified, we were pretty much unified. And then the 80s started identity politics. And this guy was like, okay, but that's also the era of Jim Crow and segregation and whatever. And he's like, well, beyond that. And you're like, no, not fucking beyond
It was unified
among white people.
Right.
White people in the Democratic Party were unified about an economic message. Everyone else suffered Jim Crow and segregation and all of the horrors of the 30s through the 1980s. Everyone else was suffering. And he doesn't understand that because white liberalism is fucking blind. It's the Bernie Sanders version of liberalism, which mm-hmm. is if we just deal with economics, we don't have to talk about that other stuff.
Right.
That other stuff is my fucking life.
The
life of my friends and the life of people that I know. That other stuff that we keep talking about as, quote, identity politics is fucking people's lives. It's literally the life that people live that aren't this fucking old, crusty white dude.
Yes.
And he's making this argument about how we really need to stop talking about it because it's, you know, it makes people that aren't in those groups. He literally says this. Hillary Clinton would go out on the campaign, on the stump, right? And she would call out to Latinas and she would call out to women and she would call out to LGBT people and she would call out to black people. And she wouldn't call out to white people. And that's why she lost. And he's like, well, okay, she would call out to them in one certain part of her speech. And then everything else that she said was about every American deserves this. Every American deserves that. Every American deserves this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare, education, all the things that her platform was. It wasn't about Latinos deserve this and Black people deserve that and women. No, she would say, and this is for all Americans, including these groups, mm-hmm. which is why they all fucking voted for her. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, that's true, but, and it's like, but what? Like, what do you want her to say? And white Americans. No.
White Americans still make up the vast majority of this country.
Yes. And
own the vast majority of the wealth, even far exceeding the ratio of pure population.
Correct. And so he's talking about how he keeps ragging on universities, right?
He's a university professor with tenure who's trying a salary from university. Yes. But fuck them.
Fuck universities because they're creating the liberal elite. The liberal elite used to be made up of governors and farmers. He loves farmers so fucking much. And union people, and now liberal elites are made up of people who went to college. And apparently when you go to college, you learn about identity politics. And so he's like the Women's March is a great example. The Women's March was just about, it started with this one woman who said, I can't believe this pussy grabber essentially got elected.
Sure.
Let's all show up in Washington, D.C. and protest.
Right.
And then people said, well, you're not being very inclusive. Like, you know, you have this council, but it's all made up of white women. How about we include all women, mm-hmm. like women from many different backgrounds? And mm-hmm. he's like, that's the kind of identity politics that ruins a movement. And the interviewer was like, and it was the largest and most successful march in modern history. So what are you saying? You're saying that the multicultural, the identity politics that was shoved into it, that we demanded that it become representative of all women, crushed it? Made it not happen, made right. it go away, made it not successful. It was the most successful thing that's happened. It's the most successful march that's happened in modern history. And he's like, well, true, but it was annoying, essentially.
To him?
Yeah, apparently. And it's like, okay, but you're not making a fucking point here.
Yeah.
There's no point to be made. Yes, this white woman did this thing. People from other backgrounds came and said, hey, let's make it more inclusive. They did that. And then it was the most successful march in history. So, like, what's the point? It was annoying to you? You found that distasteful that people said, hey, our voices should be represented if we're talking about women? It's not second wave feminism from the 70s? Okay.
Oh, I'm sure he's not a fan of that either.
No, he was.
Oh.
Because that was movement politics that was purely just
white.
Not exactly pure as the driven snow.
It's, yeah. Now you see where we're going
uh-huh.
here.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
You know, ultimately, when you boil this all down from Bernie's message to, I guess, what's coalescing as sort of a Bernie bro message, and this guy's message is, gosh, all this movement identity politics stuff, it just makes white people skittish.
Makes them uncomfortable.
They're uncomfortable. And if they're uncomfortable, they're not going to vote with us. So we need to make them more comfortable. Let's not talk about the plight of the Black people
else.
And the gay people
right.
and the women. Let's tone that down.
Let's just tone it down and let's just talk about stuff that affects white people, and then they won't be uncomfortable anymore.
And we cannot accept that.
No.
We will never accept it.
No. I shared this article with the woman of color that sits next to me, who's an amazing human being, and I love her. And we were reading it, and she was like, reading it, and she's like, wait. Hold on. Wait. Hold on. And she's way less political than I am, right?
Yeah.
But she lives in the world as a Black woman. And she goes, hold on. This person's a Democrat? Is he like a secret Republican that's like pretending to be a Democrat? And I was like, no. This is a whole movement. This mm-hmm. is a whole thing. I was like, it's called like, I call it white liberalism. And it's garbage, nonsense, awful. And she keeps reading it and she's like, that's not true. What? And I was like, yeah. So we start talking about it. She didn't read the whole thing because she was just like, oh my God. She got to the part about how we're being hysterical about race. And she was like, I'm done. I was like, yeah. And I said, she was like, well, what's the point of being a Democrat?
Exactly.
And I said, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. What's the point of being a Democrat if all of the values that gave us the civil rights movement and desegregation and LGBT rights and women the right to vote and women that created the idea that sexual assault is bad, that you can actually rape your wife, that if you're wearing jeans that you can still be raped, that that sexual assault and discrimination in the workplace exists, that all of the things, that abortion is legal, that affirmative action, all of the values of the Democratic Party that have led to all of these advancements for people that are marginalized and that are minorities, if we're just going to say fuck all of those things because white people are uncomfortable, what's the fucking point?
No.
We may as well just be Republicans. There's no fucking point to the party if we're going to throw all that away.
Then we'll lose our actual coalition and maybe we'll get a few straggling centrist white people, but...
Then what? What are we going to run on? What are our ideals then? What are they?
Bernie's narrow economic message...
Cool. And we can just keep killing black people in the streets and...
No, because the economic equality will take care of everything, I think is his angle.
Cool. So if we give everybody health care and economic equality, racism will just go away. Cops will stop shooting people in the streets? That will happen?
And racism will go away.
Good.
And neo-Nazis won't be empowered and it'll just...
Women will stop getting raped?
Yes.
Yes.
Women will stop getting raped.
Right.
That'll just all magically happen.
Everything will be fine if we just give everyone health care and free college.
Yeah.
And we tax corporations more.
Yes.
That's going to help me and my black people.
Magically.
Magically. That's going to help everybody and everything and all the struggles.
That seems to be the message. Because, the cardinal sin is making soft, bigoted, soft, racist white people uncomfortable. That's why we lost. And we need to cater to them more. I mean, that is what it boils down to. That is the argument that I'm getting.
That's what I'm hearing. I don't know how else to read it. And I'm going to pull something up that makes me very upset.
Yeah.
But it is a study that was recently done about Bernie Sanders voters and how they were able to swing this election. These are the Bernie Bros that we're talking about. And we've been talking about them quite a lot, as you know. And I get some shit for it, but it's fine. I can take it. Basically, the takedown of this research study that was done was enough Bernie Sanders supporters either voted for Trump, didn't vote, or voted for another candidate to cost Clinton the election.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not just talking about how dare you pieces of shit. We're talking about literally fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you. So 12% of people who were ardent Bernie Sanders supporters voted for Trump. 12%.
That's a larger number than I would have anticipated.
Me too. About 8% voted for another party and about 4%, I'm sorry, 6% for some other person, and a very low percentage did not vote.
Okay.
But overall, that was enough that she would have won, particularly in the three states that were sort of the, general states.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing I'd like to point out. Wisconsin, people who supported Bernie Sanders, who voted for Trump, 51,000. Guess how many Trump won by?
Like 20.
22.
Yeah.
51,000. Trump won by 22. Michigan, 47,000 Bernie supporters voted for Trump. Guess how much he won by?
It was like 20,000. 10,000. Wow.
Pennsylvania, 116,000 Sanders supporters voted for Trump.
Jesus.
He won by 44,000.
Yeah.
So literally, fuck you.
Well, they have to live with that now. And,
no, everyone has to live with that.
Everyone has to live with that now.
Everyone. And if you want to call yourself a liberal or a progressive, fuck you. You made this.
You know, a lot of them are not liberals and progressives. A lot of them are ironically like lapsed libertarians. Some of them are independent right-wing people. I would venture, this not that it makes it any better, but I would venture to guess a good percentage of those former Bernie supporters who wound up voting for Trump probably ideologically made sense for them to do that. Because How? For the very reasons we were just discussing of why a lot of these Bernie supporters are like, we need to go to open primaries and we need to stop making white people so skittish. These are the skittish white people.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that idea for universal health care. Oh, yeah. We need to tax the corporations more. Oh, I don't like the trade deals. But in terms of feminism, immigrant rights, African-American rights, civil justice reform, nah.
Doesn't affect me.
In fact, I don't like it.
I don't want it because isn't this America...
So I would actually, not that it makes it any better, but I would actually venture to guess a small percentage of those former Bernie supporters who wound up voting for Trump are not like our friends we know and talk to. Some of them are. Some of them.
Yeah.
But a lot of them were probably conservative-ish people who just liked the...
old Jewish guy?
The economic
Just the
message.
Economic message.
Yeah.
But Trump doesn't have that. Message.
No, he doesn't, but he's also less threatening to my white hegemony.
Right. Well, anyway, they cost us the election.
Yep.
We can look at it that way. We can look at all the Trump supporters and we can obviously blame them, but...
No, there are some who have definitely gone on record and said, I am a progressive Democrat and I was just so mad at what the DNC did and I just wanted to change so much that I voted for Trump and oh, now I feel really bad. And
the
Susan
Sarandons of the world.
Yeah. Well,
vote for Trump. Here's your revolution. How's it going?
Unbelievable.
How's it going?
Yeah. Very few of them have backed down from that. Have said, you know what? I made a big mistake. I'm an asshole.
I don't know natural. Anyone that has.
Well, there, I mentioned this one guy because it was an article, I think, in Slate or something.
And he said, I'm an asshole?
Yeah. He said, I voted for Trump because I was mad and now I feel like an asshole. And I'm like, well, you are an asshole.
Yes,
and you
are.
Will never, ever, ever live that down.
Nope.
You will need to do penance the rest of your life for this.
Yes.
Because you have cost lives. You have destroyed families.
Yep.
You have
destroyed
careers.
That's the thing to remember. This isn't about, I don't like Trump. It's not that I mean, I don't, and I find him incredibly distasteful and horrible. And it's not even just about the Republic. This is about actual people's lives that are being harmed
destroyed, yeah.
And destroyed. Families are being ripped apart.
Not middle upper class white guys. They're okay-ish for the moment.
The market's doing okay and, you know,
yeah,
they're pretty fine.
Yeah.
If a wall gets built, I don't care. If you deport some mother of five who's never committed a crime to a country she's never
Doesn't
known,
really affect me.
Doesn't really affect me. If you kick a bunch of immigrants out that were brought here as infants and have never known any other country and just kick them out and put them somewhere else, it's fine.
Doesn't affect the payment on my 2016 Subaru.
No, not really. No. No, not really. And transgender people in the military, I mean, that doesn't really affect me. I gotta go to work in the morning.
That's true. I have this trans coworker and they seem pretty cool, but they're not in the military. So
yeah,
whatever.
So it's probably fine. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Maybe they shouldn't be. He says it's like bad for unit cohesion. I'm guessing somebody knows something about that that's not me. I don't know.
Well, should we get to that before the break? The transgender ban?
Yeah, I guess. Okay, There's not much to say about it other than I just want to yell for hours.
Well,
I just
sure.
Scream into the abyss of anger and
well, here we are because a few weeks ago, I guess, or maybe it was a month ago now, it came out just as a tweet, but there was no guidance or there was no memo, so it was just a tweet. People didn't know what to make of it, but now there is a memo and there is guidance, and the White House is going to try to push this through, which leaves already acting transgender service members kind of in limbo, and
no other transgender people are allowed to enlist.
Yeah.
It also makes it so that no HRT therapy will be given to anyone who's already enlisted unless they already... It's not required that you take away hormone replacement therapy for people who are transgender and already in the military.
But now they're not required to pay for it.
But that's in limbo. They're like, well, you don't have to not do it, but you don't have to do it either. But there's an absolutely zero tolerance, no paying for any sort of sex reassignment surgery. And... The White House basically said, we're going to look to the military to tell us whether or not we should kick all the trans people out, which is good in a way in terms of their response to the last time he tweeted about this.
Yeah.
They all came out and said, no, I'm not doing that. And I think he knows that they don't want to do it. So he put that in the memo as like, if it's up to them to decide what's best for unit cohesion and what's best for morale and what's best for the military. Because I think he didn't want to say you have to kick them all out and have them come out and say, I'm not going to actually do that. Like, to have them defy the president, the commander in chief, and say, fuck you, no. I think they didn't want to have, like, I think the generals came in and said, don't make them make that choice. Don't make them defy you. Tell them they don't have to do it. Like, nobody else can enlist, but don't tell the generals, don't tell the fucking military they have to kick people out because they're not going to do it. And then we have a coup situation and we don't want that.
Yeah, see, the Pentagon is, whatever you want to say about the Pentagon and the military, and if, you know, you're worried that they're part of the deep state or you don't trust them, ultimately they do have a large respect for the separation of powers wherein the civilian authority directs the military what to do and then they carry out the orders.
Yes.
So ultimately, now this will be challenged legally.
Yes.
But ultimately, if that challenge comes up to where this is defined to be legal, which is questionable, we'll get into that. I mean, this is so soon that we haven't even really gotten into that, and the pundits haven't gotten into it, and the experts. But ultimately, if this holds up to legal scrutiny and it said, yes, this is legal, then the military is going to have to carry it out.
Correct.
Because ultimately, the executive branch has the authority to tell the military what to do.
Yes. Yeah, the ACLU posted the article as soon as it hit and just said, see you in court.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's so going to be challenging. And there's a better than not chance that, like the Muslim ban and all the other shit he's tried, that it could get smacked down. But we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see. Anyway, to all of our trans friends and loved ones and listeners, I'm sorry. And we love you. And
we've got your back.
We've got your back.
We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, a whole bunch more crap to talk about. So don't go anywhere. Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We covered a few things: transgender ban, Joe Arpaio's pardon by President Trump. We talked about the hurricane that made landfall in Texas. We talked about a few other things. What's next on the agenda, Rach?
I want to talk about a story that I think hasn't been covered, and I'd like to talk about it for a minute.
Okay.
The United States Army court-martialed a retired general this week.
Oh, right. Forgot about that.
That is significant for a lot of reasons. Primarily because it's the fourth time since Truman was the president that that's ever happened. The Air Force has never pardoned someone. The Navy has court-martialed someone. The Navy has done so just one time since World War II. This man's name is James Grazioplin. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. I don't care because he's a child rapist.
Mm-hmm.
He's 68. He was being court-martialed because between 1983 and 1989, he is being charged with raping a child over a six-year period at multiple stations, I guess is what you call them.
Mm-hmm.
Fort Leavenworth, Fort Bragg, Bendlock and Amberg, Germany, and Woodbridge, Virginia. What's interesting about this for me is that it's happening at all, considering that it's only happened four times since Truman, and that it's happening 30 years after the fact.
Yeah, there's no statute of limitations in the military for these crimes.
Which, maybe we could take a note out of that book. What do you think?
Maybe. Right? I mean, there are important reasons for the statute of limitations, really important reasons, not the first of which is the nature of how evidence is collected and how reliable it might be over times, and certainly things like eyewitness testimony. And but in certain cases where the evidence isn't really affected by the course of time, you know,
I think in particular for me, child rape and sexual assault of children, the statute of limitations is really burdensome, because if you're talking about a child, that child doesn't have a lot of power, you know, spanning the course of that statute of limitations, whatever it might be, to come forward. And as an adult, they often do have that power then, and can sort of say, this happened to me. And I think that the statute of limitations is bullshit, frankly. Just because you did it 30 years ago doesn't mean you didn't do it.
Yeah.
So anyway, they are not releasing a lot of details about it. We don't know exactly. I have questions about, like, is this the same child, or
they're not releasing those details. Was it a friend of the family? How did this person move around with the general? It's
right. It's very, I don't know. And I don't know why now. I don't know why this person. I don't know why this case. But I would say that I'm heartened to know that something is being done if this happened, because I really, I think that...
No, unfortunately, a lot of the history of the military has been like the church, to cover it up, to move these people around, to not want to face the bad publicity. So this is a good positive
step. To just suspend someone
or
take them out of the military, but there's no criminal action.
Right.
You know, this is a thing I talk about a lot with law enforcement or churches or whatever. Like, there's these institutions of power, and people say, well, he lost his job. It's like, I don't give a shit if you lose your job. Go to jail.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, police officers losing their job for murdering someone is like, oh, well, if I murder someone, am I going to get fired? Like, that's not how it works.
Right, right.
You go to jail if you murder somebody, or you rape somebody, or you rape a child. Like, that's what happens.
Right.
So I just wanted to bring that up. I'm going to be keeping an eye on it. And if things move forward and we find out more, I will keep us up to date.
Okay.
The next thing I want to talk about is, I don't know, do you want to talk about... the DNC and some Democratic politics for a minute?
Well, you're talking about this new push to bring more caucuses into the mix.
And Bernie Sanders and all the things.
Yeah. And then Naomi Const has been big on that. Why don't you explain again? Well, forgetting the caucus versus primary thing for a second, let's talk about why ultimately...
Let's talk about the difference between open and closed primaries and caucuses.
Right.
Okay. So the Democratic Party is a private institution.
Right.
Right? It's not, it's like a club, right? Yeah. Anyone can join. Anyone is free to join. It doesn't cost anything to join. You just sign a piece of paper that says, you click a button, whatever. I'm a Democrat, right? Same with the Republican Party.
Right.
So these are not actually government institutions. These are private parties. Private clubs, and they raise money for and support and have a mouthpiece for their candidates and for their platform. As such, if you want to vote in our club's version of who's going to be the president or the governor or a senator or whatever, you got to join the club. That's a closed primary system. Closed primaries mean if you're not a Democrat, you don't get to vote in Democratic primaries.
Right.
You don't get to have a say in who our party elects as our nominee for whatever position that it is, because you're not a part of the party. And again, it doesn't cost anything to be part of the party. You just have to say, I'm a Democrat, right?
Exactly.
Now, an open primary means that, and this is the same with Republicans, although Republican is very different depending on states, and I don't care and don't want to get into it, but this is what we're talking about as our party. So open primary means literally anyone can vote in the primary. Anyone can vote, which means a couple of things, right? So unaffiliated voters can vote in open primaries. Republicans can vote in open primaries for the Democratic Party's nominee.
Mm-hmm.
Caucuses can be open or closed. and it's the same principle. It's just instead of casting a vote on a ballot, like, you know, clicking the box like you do when you vote, it's you go and you stand in this room, which we've covered when we did the caucuses in Colorado.
And then you assign points based on
chaotic thing.
It's very convoluted, and we had to run ours.
And yeah, it was a convoluted mess. But so, Bernie Sanders, in his quest with the unity convention or whatever the fuck it's being called is calling for more open primaries and more open caucuses because he believes that those same voters we were talking about earlier will be better represented if they're able to vote in Democratic primaries and caucuses.
Right.
So the problem with that is I have massive problems with that. And one of the fallouts of 2016 that we don't talk about a lot because fucking Donald Trump won is local to us. There was a referendum on the ballot in Colorado. Citizens can put things on the ballot for voters to vote for, issues and things. One of the things that was put on the ballot was this push for a primary instead of a caucus and that all of them be open. So that won, that passed. And so 2018 will be a very good test for what I'm about to talk about in Colorado. We will find out exactly how that works. So the problem with open primaries, and Colorado's, again, a great test case for this, although I'm sure many states have this. We used to have closed primaries back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and then we opened our primaries in the late 80s and 90s, and then we reclosed them. And the reason for that is that...
You're talking about the party now. The Democratic Party.
The Democratic Party did this in Colorado. The problem that we found when we opened primaries to people who were not Democrats is that we find more centrist, watered-down candidates because people are allowed to vote in a primary for a party that they don't belong to. And so there's some degree of spoilage, which means that some really crazy Republican weirdos will come and vote in our primary and try to pick the worst person.
Just to cause chaos, right.
And just to pick the worst person they think they can beat, right?
Exactly.
Pick the person you think you can beat.
Right.
And that happens on the other side, too. Democrats go do that to them when they're open primaries. To be clear, you can only vote in one. So if you're a Republican voter, you can choose not to vote in the Republican primary and instead vote in the Democratic primary.
Yeah, like if you think your guy's going to win easily, then you can go to cause chaos
the worst
on the
candidate
other side.
That you can find.
Which is smart, which makes sense.
It does. The problem is when a bunch of people who are unaffiliated, which is what we call them in Colorado, they could be independent in other states, I don't know. Unaffiliated voters who are allowed to vote in a Democratic primary often, and I'm just going to say this and maybe it's controversial and I don't care, don't know a lot about politics. They don't understand the platform or they don't care. And they are wishy-washy and often uninformed. And so we get this mix of people who are Democrats who have a platform and a vision and they want this certain candidate or that certain candidate to win. And then we have this weird mix of people who come in and just pick a person or pick a person who they think isn't quite so liberal or isn't quite so progressive or isn't. So we get these sort of milquetoast centrist candidates that come out of our primaries that don't energize our base, that don't encourage fundraising, that don't encourage a lot of volunteering. It sort of erodes the party's infrastructure when we have candidates that people aren't really passionate about. And so for those reasons, I'm really against open primaries. I feel like if you want to vote for who the head of my club is, then join the fucking club. Or you don't get to vote.
Which is what Bernie did. He ran as a Democrat.
People
keep forgetting that.
Yes. He joined the club. And then he disjoined it, and now he's trying to infiltrate it instead of opening his own club. Why don't you start your own club?
No, because he wants to have it both ways. He wants the infrastructure and the advantages of running as a Democrat while trying to destroy or change all the institutions of it that will just benefit him personally.
Correct.
Now, let's talk about the difference between a caucus and a primary, too, because this Naomi Kantz and some of these Bernie people are pushing for more caucuses.
Yes.
That is straight up voter suppression. The fact of the matter is, if you're voting in a primary, It's very simple, unless there's a huge line or a huge wait, which in a lot of red states, they're going to make you do that, especially if you live in a Democratic district because of voter suppression and whatever. But in theory, you show up, you cast your ballot, you go home. That's it.
And in Colorado, it's even easier. Now that we have a primary system and it's open, they send you two ballots in the mail. Mm-hmm. One's Democratic ballot, one's a Republican ballot. You pick which one you want to vote
check
for.
Check it, stick
check
it in the mail.
Check the box, stick it in the mail, put a stamp on it. And it's done.
But a caucus can last 2, 3, 4, 6, 7 hours.
Yes.
Can be disorganized. It can be chaotic. And ultimately,
we had to move ours 3 different times because so many people showed up that we were like, oh, not this room. Oh, let's go to the gymnasium. Oh, that's not big enough. Let's split into groups and you go over here.
Nobody knew what was going on.
Chaos. No one has fucking time for that. You're talking about like the people who, you know, you have a job or maybe you have 2 jobs or 3 jobs and kids and you're a single parent and you work nights.
Guess what? You're just not going to vote. Or what if you're disabled?
Yeah. Good. So maybe you get a ride and then you sit there for 5 hours. I mean, it's absolutely undemocratic, I think.
No, it's antiquated. It's like we said, it's neat in some ways. If you're people like us who you can find the time and you can be involved, we basically took over our caucuses.
Yes.
And which I've talked about on Kegro show before.
Yeah.
But
because it was so disorganized and no one knew what they were doing.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just like, okay, well, fuck it. Give me the rules and I'll run it.
Yeah.
We have to have this happen. So, right. I'll just do it. Just tell me. Okay.
And again, we were caucusing for Bernie Sanders and Bernie won the state handily.
Yes, he did.
But
I regret that.
And we had a good turnout here. But overall, caucuses, you get less people voting.
Correct.
Period.
Caucuses were invented back in the day when people were in very small communities and everybody knew each other. And so you go to a barn and you talk about who you think should be the right candidate and you vote. And there's 20 people. And 20 people sit in a room for an hour and talk about who they want. And you try to convince people and there's all kinds of back and forth. And then you, at the end of the day, you're like, all right, this is the count. Now, you know, I'm in a high school and there's 10,000 people and, you know, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And there is a sense of, I felt there was definitely a sense of intimidation. And a feeling of pressure.
Because you do an initial head count, a straw count, and then everybody makes their pitch, and then you do another count.
And then
so you can't just walk in and vote who you want to vote
for.
No,
and it's public. You stand on one side of a room, and other people stand on the other
side
of the room.
Yell at each other.
And then everybody who's standing there gets an opportunity to make comments.
Yeah, because we're political geeks, because it's sort of neat and old-timey, and we imagine ourselves standing on hay barrels and... But in 2017, it's not practical.
Not at all.
And it's not conducive to getting more people involved.
No.
And representing them.
Again, I would say it is intimidating. When I went into that caucus, I was not sure who I was going to vote for. I was 50-50 Bernie Hillary.
Right.
I love Hillary Clinton. I have always loved her. I supported her in 2008, even though I fucking love Obama. I love her. And I ultimately caucused for Bernie because I felt like doing so would push her to the left, which it did. And it pushed the party platform to exactly where I wanted it to be. And I was very happy with
that
the Democratic
wasn't good enough
party
for the diehards
platform.
Right.
But of course I supported Hillary Clinton because I love her. And I think she would have been a great president anyway. But I did feel like when the room that I was in, you know, there were maybe 4 or 5 people on the Hillary side and maybe 30 or 40 people on the Bernie side. And the people on the Hillary side were being actively intimidated by our crowd. And I
bad omen, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And God, hindsight, looking back and having to shush people from the Bernie side, this fucking what will now be a Bernie bro, kind of talking shit to this older white woman and this young gay dude about voting for Hillary and how she's a shrill and she's, you know, awful. And I was like, don't say that. Don't you talk to them. Like, this is not how this works. Now is like this like weird hindsight omen of like my life, which is just.
Yeah, because we thought, okay, these Bernie people will fall in the line. They'll vote for Hillary.
They'll be like the Hillary people in 08. And they'll
maybe
eventually
he'll get some cabinet position. And yeah,
No. So anyway, the whole point of that is to say I am very upset by and not happy about the fact that we have open primaries in Colorado, and the fact that Bernie is trying to push for them, for me, tells me that he's really doing this because he feels like so much of his base are people who don't want to affiliate with the Democratic Party because they're not Democrats. And they're not liberals and they're not progressives. They're the people we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Right? So he wants to open it up so that he can win in 2020, ultimately. Right?
Yeah.
That's the point. Yeah. He's not doing this because it's better for the Democratic Party.
Personally.
It doesn't help the Democratic Party to do this.
No.
It helps him personally to do this, and it helps him again thumb his nose at the party. So it's pretty shitty. Also, I would just want to read a tweet really quick that he put out this week, and I'll get some shit for this, but I don't care. Bernie Sanders, quote, "If you cannot win an election based on your ideas, then get the hell out of politics."
And who was that directed to again? What was that about?
I don't know.
I think it was like at the GOP sort of on the
whole. I'd just like to point out that he lost.
Yeah, right?
So maybe he should get the hell out of politics.
Right?
If he can't win an election on his ideas, maybe he should get the hell out of politics.
He said it, man.
I didn't make that up. He fucking said it on Twitter. I'm just saying, maybe, you know, he should shut his fucking mouth and go away. All right. Speaking of 2020, you want to talk about Kasich and Hick?
That's not really a thing now. Hick came out and cleared the air.
No. It's a thing.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's a thing.
Okay.
So John Hickenlooper is the governor of Colorado. John Kasich obviously was a candidate for president of the GOP.
Hickenlooper was allegedly on the short list for one of Hillary's possible running mates.
Yeah. He's a brewer. He owned a brewery here in Colorado. Very boring white guy. Pretty centrist. He and John Kasich hooked up over the last couple weeks to work on healthcare reform to try to find a plan that they could sort of present to Congress to say, here's something that is bipartisan that would actually help the system that we have, and here's an idea that we have. And because, you know, Kasich is a Republican and Hickenlooper is a Democrat and they're both boring and centrist, they thought it would be a great idea.
Yeah, Kasich isn't that centrist, but...
For a Republican, in his times, he is.
He is, but on a lot of things, especially reproductive
choice,
rights, he's
yeah.
terrible.
Yes.
Awful.
Oh, I'm not saying he's a good guy. I'm saying for a Republican in the current modern era, he's very much a
yeah,
centrist.
He's not a Nazi.
He's not a Nazi. He doesn't want to kill black people, and he definitely does not want women to have reproductive rights. But anyway, so that sort of spawned this rumor that there's going to be a push for Kasich and Hickenlooper to run on a bipartisan agenda in 2020 for president.
Like form an independent ticket.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like they're going to run for president together.
Hand in hand.
Lol. So anyway, I did a little digging about that, and Hickenlooper came out and said, oh, it's just a couple of, you know, good guys working together on this stuff. You know, no, don't worry about it. But there's some back chatter that may be a thing that's being thrown around in the Democratic Party.
In the party?
Yes.
God.
There's this section, this faction of the party that's upset.
That's like just panicking since the election.
Yes. For example, to our conversation earlier, the party platform from this unity whatever bullshit was rolled out in one of the reddest counties in West Virginia, which right. is one of the reddest states in the country.
Yeah.
Because there's these dueling factions within the party. Some people are like, we need to do the white working class thing and fuck everybody else and do that, so we're going to go to West Virginia. Some people are like, no. No, us are like, no. And then some people are like, maybe we just really need to be like super boring and just white and
generic.
Men and but it's not that. What they're saying is like, we need to show that we can be bipartisan. And, you know, like back in the day when the president used to be the person who won and the vice president used to be the person who lost, and it was highly incredibly dysfunctional and it didn't work, so we changed it.
Clinton
but,
Gore.
Well, no, of different parties. Right? Back in the history of the U.S., it used to be the president was whoever won and the vice president was whoever lost.
The runner-up. That's going way back.
Yeah, way, way, way back. Yeah. So they're sort of doing this like, well, if we just say, look, we have a Democrat and a Republican and they can agree. We can build partisanship in government. We can bring people together. We can make Congress functional. And it's like, nobody wants any of that. No one wants you. You are both. So what are we compromising then? When John Hickenlooper and John Kasich, so it's like the John party, I guess,
White guy's named John Party.
The white guy's named John Party. When
you
they come
excited
together
yet?
And they have ideas, they have the binders that Clinton had, they have their platform, they have their thing. What exactly, as a Democrat, am I sacrificing with John Kasich being on the ticket? What are we saying we're going to compromise on? Tell me.
Well, reproductive rights are a big one.
So we're Democrats, but we don't know.
He's also for voter
suppression.
We are
saying no longer are we going to have choice in this country.
Right.
We just don't have reproductive rights because we decided to put a fucking Republican on the ticket who doesn't believe in it. Great.
This is a strident anti-choice Republican.
These are things that Democrats are going to vote for. And Republicans.
Not this one.
If you're a Republican, you're like, great. So as a Republican, what are the things that I'm sacrificing voting for John Hickenlooper? And it's all the things. So I don't know how this fucking works. I don't know how it works. I think you'll get a lot of independents to vote for you. But I don't know how that helps Democrats or Republicans or the country to just say, we don't actually have values.
Because we're back into this mindset like we had in the Bush-Gore election that, boy, the two-party system is bad. And look, we had these two bad candidates, especially
the really bad
candidate actually won. And that just shows you how bad the other candidate and the other party is. And so,
yeah,
you know,
lesser of two evils,
there's all
the
these
same person
screaming Bernie bros out there saying we're sick of the two-party system. And
cool, reform the entire Constitution then, because there's no other way to fucking win. So,
or get rid of all the parties and have a national popular vote.
Yeah, or become parliamentary. I mean, if we were in a parliamentary system right now, as in Europe, Trump would not be the president.
Well, I think we'd have been. I think we're so partisan in this country, we wouldn't get a working government. We'd have anarchy.
Right. True. Coalitions.
Yeah.
But I think
wouldn't be able to make a coalition.
I mean, we wouldn't have President Trump. There would have been a vote of no confidence. It would have overwhelmingly won, and we'd have formed a new government.
Right.
That's how it works. Like, they don't,
yeah,
they don't have to
they,
wait for four
they do
fucking
it
years.
In
they
Israel,
don't do that.
That's how they do
it's
it.
So they do it in almost all of Europe.
Yeah.
Right? It's a parliamentary system. We don't have that because our founding fathers were, I guess, so smart.
Well, I don't think they quite foresaw it becoming this binary partisan machine it has become now either.
Right. And especially, I would argue, since Citizens United and money has no end, no limit, it has really ratcheted up that partisanship, I would argue. But anyway, that's a thing that I think is also a terrible idea, but it might be happening. I don't know. We'll see. I think you put these two really, really boring white guys that make everyone sacrifice their ideals together, and I don't see how they beat the really strong contenders that we have in the Democratic Party. And also, who's on top of the ticket? Kasich or Hick?
I don't know. They arm wrestle for it. Mud wrestle.
Who knows? Do a reality show about it. Who knows? So pivoting off that, I want to talk about reproductive rights and a couple of things that have happened this week. I guess this is in the last, 2 weeks. First of all, the state of Texas, which is being bombarded by a tropical storm, passed a law that would require women to obtain rape insurance.
Yeah, explain what you mean by that.
So, they passed a law that mandated that no private, let's just remember really quick, this is the Republican Party, the party of small government and free markets. Just have that in the back of your head. That requires that every private insurance company is not allowed, not permitted, to cover abortion services for people who pay the insurance company. Instead, they created a separate basically calamity insurance for cases of rape. So if you feel like you might get raped, you can buy this insurance so that you don't have to have the rapist's baby. Otherwise, your insurance is not allowed to. The free market insurance company, the independent corporation.
Freedom, MAGA, bald eagle, freedom.
That you pay money to every month to provide you for insurance out of your own pocket is not allowed to, even if they want to, and if there is a demand and it makes sense for them, isn't allowed to cover your abortion, even in the cases of rape or incest. Instead, you have to buy a separate, literally, rape insurance so that if you get raped, you can have a separate insurance to pay for that abortion. That fucking happened. And it
did. I don't,
wasn't just proposed. I was not worried about it.
It passed and Abbott
fucking
signed it.
Fucking Greg Abbott signed it. It's law.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to hold up in court, but the fact that it passed, Texas just never stops. They really have like overtaken like Alabama and you know, Mississippi in many ways of just being the most backwards, awful, ridiculous government on earth.
Yes, I would totally agree with that. And you know what? Saying it may not stand up in court is one thing, but what about all the women that get raped and get pregnant before the appeal is over in 5 years?
Right. Yeah.
What happens to them?
Yeah. I mean, a court could put a stay as soon as it gets challenged, but we don't know. But you never really know how the courts are going to react to these kinds of things.
Well, it's going to go through Texas courts first.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a year and a half.
Yeah.
Then it'll get to federal court, also in Texas. Then it'll get to appeals court, hopefully outside of Texas, but Texas is pretty fucking big.
It is, but I mean, ultimately, these backdoor, de facto removal of Roe v. Wade don't hold up. But of course, we have some abortion cases that are coming over the Gorsuch Supreme Court soon, so that could be changed. That world could be changing as well.
That's right. On the brighter side of the reproductive rights issue, I would like to point to Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
My loves, you did a great thing. Oregon passed a law that made abortion free for everyone. That's not a joke.
Yeah.
They made abortion free for everyone. It comes out of a small fee that everyone pays. There is a religious exemption to that fee.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty narrow and pretty strict, the religious exemption, and it's a very small fee. And what it does is provide for not just abortion, although that is huge. That's the most progressive abortion policy in this country.
Right.
Not only is abortion legal and accessible, it is free. It is also free to people who are not registered citizens. So if you're an undocumented worker and you don't have access to health insurance and you get pregnant and you don't want to have a baby, you can have an abortion and it doesn't cost you any money because that's how the fucking world should work.
Right.
It also covers the following: cancer screening, STI screenings, vasectomies, and other reproductive health services.
How about that?
So this small fee that every citizen of Oregon pays covers all reproductive health services for everyone who's in the state, regardless of whether you are a citizen, regardless of whether you have money or you don't have money, regardless of anything, regardless of your circumstances. You are not bound and chained by pregnancy or forced motherhood or anything else. You are free to choose what you would like to do. And additionally, can be provided ways not to get pregnant and screenings for STIs and cancer. And I mean, it's sort of the greatest thing that happened for me this week. It was like my little bright spot.
Yep. Oregon has some very progressive legislation over the last 5-10 years.
There are very rural, very red parts of Oregon as well.
Oh, yeah.
Same as Washington.
Same as Washington.
I've lived in all three of the states, California, Oregon, and Washington. And I lived in a sort of rural area of Oregon that was not so progressive, like Portland, for example. But again, it's like Colorado, right? Mm-hmm. The epicenters of population are the things that make legislation. So I just wanted to point that out because I thought it was just kind of tremendous, considering that this is one country that we live in, where in Texas you have to buy insurance in case you get raped so that you don't have to have a rapist baby. And in Oregon, everyone can have an abortion for free, no matter the cause or reason, even if you're not a citizen.
Yeah.
This is one country we live in.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much longer that's going to be possible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty stark contrast.
It definitely is.
Yeah.
Well, what else we got?
Valerie Plame.
Valerie Plame's back in the news.
Did you hear about this?
No, I haven't heard that name in 10 years.
Tell us who she is.
She was the CIA operative who was outed by Dick Cheney in retaliation for her husband writing a piece that was critical of the Iraq war and the reasons used by the Bush administration.
The lies used by the Bush administration.
In terms of weapons of mass destruction.
Correct. So they, the Bush administration, Dick Cheney in particular, but
had Scooter Libby take the fall. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then wasn't he pardoned?
I think so. I don't remember.
Yeah.
He
so
did
anyway,
a little time. And then
she was the CIA agent though. Yeah. Her husband was the journalist and she wrote a book and there was a movie and all the things. Anyway, she came up in the news because she is trying to crowdsource buying Twitter so that Trump can't use it anymore.
Okay.
I was like, just take all my money. Just take all of it. I think it's
then brilliant. He would just go to like what, Snapchat or...
We'll buy that too. Instagram. I just thought it was super cute and funny and I sort of love her.
Okay.
And I was like, just take all my money because well, it's amazing. Donald Trump looked at the eclipse.
Yeah, the eclipse was earlier this week. I was in Missouri, so I could get see the full totality, and yes. It was really neat.
I was here, and it was really neat.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. So
I enjoyed it very much.
That was fun, but some people opined on Twitter, how many pictures am I going to have to see of idiot Trump squinting into the sun without glasses? And sure enough, Trump squinted into the sun without glasses.
He literally,
glasses.
Like... I was talking to my niece who I hung out with after the eclipse and she was talking about how she was looking at it and she was like, of course you can't look directly into the sun, Rachel. She's 7.
Yeah.
And I said, of course you can't. And she said, so I had to wear glasses even before I looked at the sky. I wanted to put my glasses on just so I made sure I did not look at the sun. And I said, that's really smart. Mm-hmm. And she said, yeah, because if you look at the sun, you could seriously hurt your eyes and you could even be blind. And mm-hmm. I was like, I know it's really good. I'm really glad. And she was like, it was really cool. And then, you know, there's the literal pictures of the president staring at the sun, staring at it. Like, and there were so many memes and so many funny things like, well, did Obama wear glasses? Then I'm not going to, you know, just what a fucking idiot. Just like, you just look at it and you're like, God, like, what is this human? Why is he in charge of anything? He can't even be in charge of his own fucking eyeballs. I just can't. He's just a fucking moron.
Yeah.
God.
What I did in the 24 hours leading up to it is look for eclipse hoax websites or eclipse. I found a couple.
Yeah. What do flat earthers think about the eclipse? Do you know?
Oh, they have their flat earth explanation for it.
Oh, like, they do.
You can have an eclipse. Yeah. The moon can block the sun, but not in the way that, you know.
That
it's actually happening is reality.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
But of course, the moon can go in front of the sun. Yeah. It's just the earth is flat.
Okay. Just.
I forget what they said. They said something ridiculous about the moon. But no, there were a couple of eclipse hoax blogs. Those were entertaining, but don't know if they're still up. Definitely was not a hoax. I saw it with my own eyes.
Me too. Me too. It was super cool.
Yeah.
I really loved it. I was at work and one of the partners of the law firm came out and was like, do you want to see the eclipse? And he had glasses. I didn't have glasses, which I was super bummed about, but then everybody else did. And then we all were in the break room and we went outside. And then the shadows was one of the coolest things.
Mm-hmm.
The like little, I don't know.
Crescent sun.
Yeah.
Shadows.
But then there was like things that looked like skulls and like this billowing cloud of skulls and crescents. And I was like, this is like the gothest thing that's ever happened. It was amazing. Yeah. It was like the coolest thing I've ever seen.
And the certified eclipse glasses worked incredibly well.
Yeah. Mine were great.
Like they even cut through the clouds and like you can see perfect.
We had no clouds. I mean, the sky was just as clear as it could possibly have been. And
We had some clouds to contend with, but
yeah, we did not. And it was just, I mean, it was amazing. And it lasted for, you know, you get to see this part of it and that part of it. And, it was amazing. I mean, I really was awestruck by it. I loved it. What else?
I guess that's about it. I guess one thing I wanted to talk about, there's going to be a close eye on, of course, this is much less important in the scheme of like the people whose lives are affected by this hurricane. But how is Trump going to react? And what was very interesting is so far in the first 24 hours, I think he's actually been very cognizant of wanting to appear to give a shit.
Yes.
And that he wants to do something.
Yes.
Which is
he
smart.
He doesn't want to be W.
No, he doesn't right. want to be W with Katrina.
Yes.
So he's been very, so far, but he may get bored of that and he may just go play golf. But more importantly than that, this is going to be like Katrina. I don't know if any of you remember, but the first 48 hours after Katrina, there was a lot of conflicting news, and we did not know the gravity of it. We just didn't. We're like, oh, maybe it wasn't that bad. The wind was less than we thought. And
I have to tell you, I did, because a very, very dear friend of mine fled.
Okay.
From Katrina.
But the point is, the country at large, it took 48 to 72 hours to maybe a full week to really get the full picture of how bad it was. And I don't, this may not quite be that, in the sense of, you know, there aren't the levees to broach.
Exactly. There were so many
things.
It's
not underwater.
The confluence of events of Katrina
right.
were what made it so
bad. But this is going to be much worse. Like right now, they keep flashing this Cryon, one dead, 12 injured. It's going to be way higher than that. Yep. This is just what they have reported so far.
And they're like, oh, it's downgraded to a tropical storm. And you're like, great, but this is day one.
Yeah.
And they have said, and maybe they're wrong, I don't know, and I hope that they are, that these people are right, that this is not a big deal, that, you know, this storm system has the potential to come back out to the sea because the waters are so warm and gain steam and come back. And
well, even if it doesn't do that, it's going to sit
over
Texas,
the top of Texas, for 3 to 4 days.
20 to 30 to 40 inches on parts of Texas.
Right.
So that's going to be calamitous.
Yes.
So the question is going to be, with the president, who's very little care to infrastructure and emergency response and leadership, how is he going to handle it? And I don't think he's going to handle it. And then
no. And since we don't have an actual functioning government in terms of, you know, posts not being filled and entire departments really having no staff,
that could be devastating.
That's devastating.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what's interesting about that is I don't understand why that's the case. So Republicans control Congress and the president has the power to appoint people, and only a few positions need advice and consent. And yet thousands of posts across the federal government are not filled.
Yeah.
We don't really have a functioning government, and that's upsetting.
Yeah.
And in this situation, I don't know what that's going to mean. Hopefully the state of Texas has a more functional government than the federal government does.
In some ways, Abbott seems to be on top of it right now, but this is a guy who has not cared for government intervention.
Right. Government
and
is bad.
And he didn't
very bad.
Care for FEMA, but now he seems to care about them a lot. But
it's
in any event,
how that works.
We'll see how this goes over the next few days. I hope it's not so bad, because I have no confidence in the leadership of this administration to handle it properly.
And I really, you know, Katrina struck home for me in a lot of ways, and I really would not like to see anything like that ever happen to this country ever again. And again, that was a much different storm and a much different confluence of events that caused it, and that caused the backlash and the sort of non-reaction.
Well, you know what?
And all of the New Orleans Police Department is notoriously corrupt, and the federal government didn't care because it was a bunch of black people, and there's a lot of
yes,
things that
I was
going to
say
Katrina.
These coastal parts of Texas up through the valley up through to San Antonio, a lot of white people,
a lot of oil.
Yep.
So
there's vested interest to
take care of these people and to take care of this problem.
Yes.
In a way that did not exist in New Orleans, which is.
But that doesn't necessarily mean
the history of this country. That, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean that this administration is capable of doing that, even if they want
to. No, exactly. Even if they have the will to do it, which George W. Bush did not, I don't know that they have the capacity to do it. I don't know that they're staffed or knowledgeable enough to do anything to help anyone.
So we'll see.
So yeah.
Okay, so that's going to do it for us. We'll be back next week. Irreverent Duo at Twitter, irreverenttestimony@gmail.com. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. See you later. Bye.